didn't know better. I think you were loving another. You're always a liar with a mouth full of fire. And then I discovered you hiding under the covers. Every word you ever said, I never wanna hear again. I never wanna see your face. You better be leaving this place. Each other like we weren't even lovers. I thought I knew better, but you were loving another. You're always such a liar, love is always a crier. Well, I guess you grew tired, well, I lost all desire. It's every word you ever said, I never wanna hear again. I never wanna see your face. Better be leaving this place. You know what's best for you, but you don't, do you? Know what's best for you, but you don't, do you? Know what's best for you, but you don't, do you? Know what's best for you, but you don't, do you? Know what's best for you, but you don't, do you? Know what's best for you, but you don't, do you? Know what's best for you, but you don't.
What's going on, people out there? You got Johnny Hacksaw, and this is the Hacksaw Radio Show, episode number 15 tonight. Tonight is Sunday the 25th of July at about 2:05 in the morning. Remember, you can grab episodes in MP3 format off of our website at hacksawradio.com, kindly provided to us by hbx.us. That's www.hbx.us. Also, you can check out our news line over at 206-888-5819. Also, we have a directory of our old archived episodes of both the Hacksaw Laser and the Hacksaw Radio shows. I believe they go up to episode 10, so make sure you go over there and check that out. Also, we got the Hacksaw Freestyle archived over there as well. But definitely get the MP3s off of HacksawRadio.com. That's HacksawRadio.com for all your hacksawing needs. On tonight's show, we have a Spiff-O-Matic and talking about the big things he does. But we'll get into that a little bit later. Right now we got roll call. We got our host, myself. Hi. We got co-host Hairball.
What's up?
And our engineer co-host Avid.
Hey, what's up?
We got Biggie.
Hello.
And Dominatist.
What's up, fools?
Of Scope 6. And we got Nexus.
What's up?
Who is, what do you do again? Administrator for HBX?
Yeah, I'm the no-skill administrator.
There we go. No-skill administrator. That's pimp status. And then we got our guest on, Spiff-O-Matic.
What's up?
Going on. Spiff-O-Matic, for all the people that haven't heard of you out there, like, what have some of the stuff that you've done in the past?
I don't know. I've done a bunch of bug tracks for software I found around in my college. I administrate hackthesite.org. And I'm currently working for Lockheed Martin.
Nice. You want to get into a little bit about what you do there, or?
Lockheed Martin, I'm not really at liberty to say, as odd as that sounds.
Right, obviously.
The project started completely public, but then DARPA funded us. I'm not really sure what my project has to do with defense, but they funded us and basically told us to shut up.
Nice.
It's in the anti-tampering security department, and I'm working with a lot with reverse engineering and different, you know, techniques to prevent it, different techniques to do it.
Now, Lockheed Martin, I know that Lockheed Martin does, like, a lot of aeronautics and stuff, and, you know, they build a lot of the inner workings for, like, airplanes. Like, a buddy of mine right now is assembling, cockpits for the F-117A. Is that kind of like what you do, or is it more along the lines of, like, the computer end?
I'm closer to the software end of stuff. Personally, I'm getting into, like, RF crap. I just recently assembled a RF transmitter that I've been able to playing around with. I can get into a certain manufacturer of car, the keyless entries.
Ooh, nice.
And I'm writing up a nice paper on that, so that should be out soon. I'll release that with, like, Hack the Site or someplace. I don't know.
Nice. The Hairball, you got anything?
Actually, I'm really interested enough to get go with the keyless entries. That is something that you're at liberty to speak about.
I'd
love to hear how something like that could be done.
Yeah, that's completely one of my hobbies. Every once in a while, I'd pick up one of those 2600 magazines, and in there it had something about breaking into, like, a Mercedes with, like, one of those universal remotes that you can train. So I was like, oh, that's pretty fat. So I'm playing with key locks, like my dad's keys, a friend of mine's keys, my boss's keys. And, all right, about 80% of the keyless entries are RF, not really infrared. So I went and looked online how to make an RF transmitter that would interface with my computer. And it's just something real blind that just reads in information. The bitch is getting, like, a... the figuring out the frequency of whatever it is. But once I got the frequency, I can just read in the information, look at different cars from the same manufacturer, see the differences between them, pick up on the algorithm they're using. And I've been able to get in to a couple different manufacturers, mostly
right.
Just Fords.
Well, I know that I used to have a Saturn, and in the user's manual, it specifically said that every time I used the keyless entry, it sent a different code. Is that true with a lot of manufacturers, or do you find that you can just send the same open code over and over again?
This one's, it's been sending different ones, but I've been able to, just by listening to different, you know, times, sitting there over and over and over again, reading what it's been sending out, you can tell, you know, what it wants in between each time, you know, what it's changing by just looking at the different crap.
Do you have, an allocated time period between which you receive the information, figure out what you need to send, and send it before it times out?
Yeah, I did all this, setting a certain time intervals. I'd send it, you know, do it again after 1 second, after 2 seconds, see if that had anything to do with it. It seems to just be a random seed.
Nice. So, what type of work do you do with Hack the Site?
I started out there last August. That's when I started doing all this crap. As just a regular user. Then I was, like, a developer or whatever. I made a couple levels. But right now, I have root access. The guy who owns it really trusts me with that. So I'm basically doing anything there that needs to be done.
Nice.
Where'd you first learn about Hack the Site, and what kind of motivated you to take all your spare time and, you know, volunteer for that project? I imagine it's a lot of work to design levels and stuff.
Yeah. I found it from Google. It used to be a Hullabaloo or something like that, and then it changed to hackthesite.org and grew, like, huge. And what motivated me was I beat all the levels, and then I, my girlfriend actually was like, she thought I could actually hack the site itself. And I guess that, I just, you know, I did. I found some way to, like, give myself extra points beyond their point system thing.
Cool.
So then they let me develop a couple levels.
Sounds like a pretty natural progression.
Yeah.
Do you know if you were the first one to actually hack the site?
I'm pretty sure I'm not. People do it all the time. I'm actually trying to start a new website because I'm kind of getting fed up with how Hack the Site has progressed.
Hmm.
Getting way too political for my taste. I tend to think, you know, if you're mixing politics and hacking, you're just going to end up, like, in jail. Hacking should just be looked at as, like, you know, hacking. It's just security. It's a job field.
I can definitely see both ends of that conversation.
Yeah.
I mean, because hacking has to be political because of all the crazy laws. But at the same time, people who are into hacking just really hate politics. At least some of them do. So I can definitely see where you're coming from on that one.
Right. I mean, like, Zach, he started it. And, you know, he's really into the politics of hacking, the whole hacktivism thing. And I'm pretty against that. So I don't have a set domain or anything for this new website I'm coming up with, but I've got a couple real nice ideas for challenges, more towards shell.
Hi, Ticket Hairball is taking a call right now. Well, on some of the levels that you designed for Hack the Site, like, what do they involve? You know, like, without getting, you know, taking away the secrets.
There was only one I directly by myself developed, and that was just a basic, you know, crack the MD5, not real hard, but there was a lot of other levels I had, you know, help with, helping the kids who were making the levels more secure, more accurate, because there's a couple levels where, like, you have to do some, like, cross-site scripting, like cookie stealing, sending, like, a private message to somebody else and getting their cookie back. And there's no real good way to do that with, like, you know, the missions we have are, like, fake. They're not real businesses that you're going to be stealing somebody's cookie from.
Right.
So we have to automate, like, we got to parse through what the user sends to see if it's actually going to be stealing the cookie or not. And I help with that.
Now, how close is that to, like, real world? Are you using, like, the actual same technique that you would, you know, as in terms of, like, let's say if you're going to do it to, you know, hypothetically a company?
Yeah. We're trying to, like, we have a lot of SQL injection techniques, and one of our users, I don't know if I should say his name or not, but he is amazing with SQL injection, and he's taken, you know, like, the stuff he's learned at HCS, Hack the Site, and he's gone on, he's done a lot of security penetration testing.
Right.
Not really sure if it was too wanted, but he's done that to a lot of companies and helped them out.
Nice.
It has its good implications.
Now, that's actually something that most people would seem to not quite understand whenever you say they helped them out. I understand that you're, you know, one of the few and far between white hats in the history of computing.
Right.
I mean, a lot of people don't have morals. I mean,
well, I tend to, I'm one of the few at Hack the Site that will, if somebody on IRC or whatever comes in and, you know, in caps, all caps, in bold, bright colors and everything, says, like, how do I hack? I'll actually, you know, try and set them aside and ask them what they want, try and teach them. Because, you know, we've all been there.
All right.
It's easier to have somebody to help you than just be floundering on your own. And one of the things I really stress are, you know, the moral aspects of it. You know, a lot of the people that I do help out do end up doing, like, you know, kind of freelance security testing for websites, but they do send out, you know, like, an informative email to the administrator or whatever telling them how to fix it, which I'm kind of proud of.
So, earlier on the show, you mentioned a whole bunch of college applications that you did some interesting things with. Was that particularly difficult?
No, they were all pretty simplistic. The one was just basic JavaScript injection, but the real bad part about it was the whole, it was SCT.com's software. It's like a whole front end for, like, college users. Like, it has an email client interface and everything. And the email, you could attach an HTML document that had a, if you had, like, an onload event, you could, like, link to another page that had a whole ton of JavaScript. And by using, like, you know, the parent.whatever with Java, the whole rest of the client was based on JavaScript. So you had complete access to everything that user would have. You could delete emails, parse their address book, send out the exploit again to other emails, you know, making a little mini worm.
And whenever you found this hole, what did you do?
I played with it at first, you know, showed my friends. It was fun. And then I told the Drexel administrators. They didn't really like it too much. I was kind of threatened to. I was threatened with being kicked out of school on multiple occasions, regardless of my intentions. You know, I told them about it, showed them how to fix it, and everything.
All right.
So I had to go around them. I eventually told SCT.com. They were real happy with it.
Mm-hmm.
And that I think that was. I don't know if that was my first bug track or not. I'm not sure.
Well, being a white hat, do you get that a lot? That, like, when you try and tell the administrators about the flaws in their system, you know, that they get offended?
Usually they don't get offended. Drexel's been the only people that have gotten offended at me. The worst, aside from Drexel, is I've had companies just not respond and make a new version or send out a patch. But I've had a good amount of companies, you know. I've had companies actually call me back. Like, I'll give them my phone number, and they'll call me, you know, being real nice about it and everything.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they should. You're doing them a favor.
That's what I would think, but...
I mean, you're turning around, and you're saying, hey, here's a mistake I found in your software. Here's how to fix it. When other people would be like, ew, let's post it to the package store and watch all the script pages, have fun for a month.
Right.
And not only are you doing them a favor, you're doing all their customers a favor as well.
Right. Exactly.
And some of them don't look at it like that, though. You know, they got, like, this warped vision of, like, the way things are.
Yeah. And even on top of that, I never released, like, any exploit code with any of my bug track postings. I think I did once with the JavaScript thing, but that was... No, not with the JavaScript, with the... There was a remote administration tool that Drexel used to, like, take over kids' computers, like, if kids aren't paying attention in class, they can just shut off your computer or whatever.
Right.
And there was a real crappy encryption method that encrypted the password onto the computer, and that was the only... That was my first bug track posting, so I wasn't really, like, too knowledgeable on the whole bug track scene. I did post an exploit along with that, but it was written in Pascal, and I'm not sure how many people still use that.
Was it just a decryption program?
Yeah.
Well, how'd that work? They stored in a local registry or something?
No, it was actually in a file. It was clear text, the encrypted password, and it was really straightforward. It was just kind of like a hex-esque system, but it went, instead of, like, with hex going up to 16, it went to, like, 20. So it was just stupid. It wasn't really smart.
And once you had the password, you would just be able to use the own software to take over computers in the local network?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's funny, though. A lot of companies have systems like that, and you know, security is never an issue. In most cases, you tell them stuff is insecure, and they'll just be like, we don't got time to fix that.
Right.
That's really a bad thing. That's why. And then when someone does, like you turn around and you say, you know, you should fix this. Here's how to fix it. I didn't do anything wrong with it. I'm just trying to teach you. And they turn around and call you a terrorist, you know?
Right. Really, I have even offered to fix it for them. But, you know, they can't. That's way too much power to be giving a freshman.
Access that you already had.
Exactly. You know.
I'm sure we all have our fair share of times when we were honestly trying to help, but we were treated like criminals.
Yeah, I can't let it, you know, put me down, because they have to appreciate it more than if I were to release it on PacketStorm and just let everybody destroy them.
Right. Well, see, when it boils down to that, like, what I see happening with, like, companies and universities and stuff, you know, like, or, you know, they're actually releasing power for you to be able to fix it. You know, they're not looking, you know, they're just looking at it as, like, a standpoint of, like, okay, well, what are we going to do if we give this person, you know, root in order to fix this? You know, instead of, you know, issuing them a title, they're not, you know, like, looking at it as, like, you know, like, kind of like a mentality, that, you know, that you might be smart enough just to fix it, and that's all you want to do. You know, they're going to turn around and, you know, think about, well, you know, what's going to happen, you know, to the rest of our system. You know, it's like they have this closed, how can I say it? They got this closed mindedness about the whole thing. You know, to where, you know, they think that they're better than you, you know, because, you know, they're the administrator, not you, not realizing that yet you just rooted them.
Right.
You know, and you're offering to fix it, you know.
Yeah, I think jealousy does play a part of it. When you're talking to the person whose job it is to keep things secure,
mm-hmm.
and they're not doing it, you know, and having somebody who's obviously not as experienced doing something like that, well, not, you know, scholarly experience.
Right. I think another problem is that, you know, that they fail to take into account is that, you know, when your computer is connected to a phone line or a DSL or, you know, to where millions of people have access to their boxes, you know, that, you know, you're going to come across this and, you know, you'd rather have people, you know, help them,
right.
you know, instead of just rooting their stuff, you know. Then I think that, you know, a lot of the system administrators out there, you know, should take that into an account when, you know, when they do get, you know, an email or, you know, a posting inside their box stating, look, you know, you've just been rooted, you know, you need to patch this, that, and the third, and, you know, well, here's an attachment, you know, for the patch, you know. I mean, if they're just going to, all they're going to do is turn around and, you know, call the feds or, you know, try and make legal problems for the people that are trying to help them. You know, I mean, what are you supposed to do then, you know, not help them?
Yeah.
You know.
I've just tried to brush it off. I haven't gotten kicked out of school, so I'll keep doing it until I do, you know.
Yeah.
Do you foresee yourself being expelled because of your trying to help the administrators?
Well, not directly. I want to, you know, help them. I'd rather not have... See, there are other kids that have been getting into the school and, you know, aren't as nice. And I hear about it all the time. So, I want to do something to help that out.
If I can just throw something in real quick. You know, you're talking about people not wanting to let you help, etc. You kind of have to look at, you know, their standpoint on it. I mean, they have to look at, you know, do you have an ulterior motive? Are you going to, you know, fix one problem but add something for you to get into, you know, a lot easier for yourself later on?
Right,
and that's something you got to look at.
I completely see that. I mean, I only offer my direct physical help if they don't have the time or effort. You know, they don't want to do that. Otherwise, I do give them all the information they need to fix the whatever hole I'm talking about.
So, do you confront them in person?
I know one of them personally. I've talked to him, a security analyst there. But the rest, no.
So what's the initial response you would get after informing somebody of a bug? Is it just like, traditionally you do it by email? I mean, you said that the one time you did do it in person.
Right. He has AOL Instant Messenger, so I talk to him there most of the time. Usually when I confront him with a bug, it's really infant, you know. It's something very simple, like something's just kind of not working right. And, you know, his initial response, probably like mine or anybody else's, would be like, that's not a problem. Like with the problem of the JavaScript injection, my example exploit I showed him was just something that would pop up with like an alert, you know, JavaScript, and, you know, that's not a real big deal. But then once I found out all the rest of the commands in the email client were JavaScript, and I could access them using JavaScript, calling those functions, then it did become a problem. So I generally have to find a hole and then find its worst possible implication and point that out.
Sounds to me like this guy really doesn't take things you tell him serious. I mean, I guess a lot of people don't know that if you can make a little JavaScript window pop up, I mean, you've pretty much got access to a lot more things than just that.
Right.
Or to the point you got to show him the worst case scenario to even get his attention is probably a really bad thing.
Well, I mean, I've only been doing this for like less than a year. I don't know too much about hacking in general, but from what I've seen, it seems to be like most hacking is, you know, you get a little bit of access and you escalate your privileges. you know, up to however much you can get. So you'd think you'd want to get every little hole as far right away, you know. Get rid of these privileged escalation things.
Well, what I've noticed about a lot of business, specifically educational institutions, is that when something like this is brought to their attention, they would feel much more comfortable hiring a quote-unquote professional to come in for $300 an hour and take their way of fixing it, which usually is a very long and expensive process, than just have the person who found it, you know, suggest the way to do it. I mean, Nexus mentioned the whole ulterior motive theory, but I don't really think that these businesses are doing a really good idea by calling out a third party to fix a problem that someone else who is obviously more familiar with it discovered. And unfortunately, I don't see this going away for a long time. Businesses are probably going to continue to be expensive way for many years to come.
Right.
Yeah, well, maybe that's because, you know, technology, the new computer technology is different, you know, and like 60-year-old CEOs hire people. They didn't live with technology that we do, you know, so they really don't know the threat, I don't think, nearly as much as the new kids do, like, you know, us younger guys compared to 50 and 60-year-old CEOs.
Right. I mean, Lockheed, that's one of the things I really liked about them. Lockheed got me through Drexel through a contracting job, and one of the things my Drexel advisor always said was never to mention anything about Hack This Site, never call myself a hacker. You know, I'm dubbed a security analyst. I can't say anything about that. But then I was giving a demonstration where I was, you know, reverse engineering some software in front of them, you know, whatever. And they asked me some questions about hacking, and I felt, you know, why not? I told them about all the stuff, and oddly enough, because of that, they actually value me a lot more. They consider me like one of, you know, like an insider on this whole underground thing,
right,
that they can use as a reference, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Well, that actually brings up a really good topic, is how to get recognized by a company like Lockheed Martin or possibly an organization like the FBI or NSA to the point where they're willing to hire you for a position. I'm sure a few of our listeners are really into computer hacking but don't want to be running from the law all their lives and wouldn't mind joining that force.
Yeah.
What are some ways that you can make it easier for them to approach you or to making them more comfortable in hiring someone whenever you're either a known hacker or they suspect you of being one?
I've actually had a job offer from Symantec, the company that makes Norton antivirus, and they contacted me from BugTrack postings they've seen. Apparently one of the people who's higher up in Symantec has a friend, I forget what it was, has a friend or himself does some administration at a college, and because I found there was the SCT.com and WebCT, which are both pretty well-known college software things, you know, whatever, for grading and email clients, whatever. Because of the BugTrack postings I had on them, they just contacted me from that. So I guess the best advice I could offer is, you know, do it the nice and legal way. Contact the company first. Give them time to patch. Release a bug track, you know, to get your credit. And, you know, wait.
And you said you got your job at Lockheed Martin through another job you had?
No, that was from Drexel.
Drexel. I'm not familiar with that company.
That's a college.
Oh, okay.
Sorry.
Well, I should have known that. That's my fault.
But, yeah, they just, they contacted Drexel. Drexel's a well-known engineering school, and, my teacher is, it was for, like, a University 101 class, something real dumb. He's also, like, the head of the, something with the engineering department. So they contacted him, and, he'd overheard me talking about some junk I found with Drexel, complaining about how they wanted to kick me out and whatnot. So he just confronted me and asked me if I wanted it.
That's pretty impressive. That's really impressive.
It's pretty lucky.
Yeah.
So you said you really can't mention the things that you do at Lockheed Martin. Will you be able to talk about some of the other things going on there?
I don't see anything other than what I'm doing. It's pretty well secured there.
Okay.
Do they throw away anything good?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Like, okay, well, like, being the fact that, you know, I'm not bounded under any secrecy contracts with Lockheed, and I don't work for Lockheed. Here where I live, we have a local Lockheed, and, like, I can go into a little bit about what I know about Lockheed and, like, the people I know that work there. Like, Lockheed does, like, a wide variety of things from everything from software all the way up to, like, manufacturing. And, like, a couple of my friends, they build, they do, like electronic assemblies for cockpits for, the F-117A for one. That's what they're currently working on. A lot of jumbo planes, things like that. Then, like, for software, they do, like, proprietary software for, like, government usage and stuff like that. And the stuff that they throw away, I know that Lockheed turns around, and I know that they update their software at least twice every 3 years, I think it is, and they just end up throwing it all out into one big dumpster that ends up going to a certain landfill and then just gets crushed. You know, and like these are all working like components and stuff, but good luck ever trying to get into Lockheed to go dumpster diving, because it's not going to happen.
Yeah.
You know, like, unless you know somebody there, and even then you pretty much won't be able to take anything out. Some of the workers might even be hard because they're searched on the way in and on the way out. They're issued, like, visitor's badges. Anytime that you're walking through Lockheed, you have an escort. And then, like, there are certain areas that you are just not going in, like, for their certain, like, the top secret clearances. And then, you know, with the clearances above top secret, you're just not going in there.
But so they make products for the war in Iraq?
I guess you could say that.
Mm-hmm. But Lockheed is like a big government contractor, basically.
Yeah.
You know, Lockheed might as well be the government, though. I mean,
a lot
really.
Of people do consider them that.
Yeah, I mean, really. But, I don't know. But am I generally correct in what I say?
Yeah, from what I've heard.
All right. Cool.
But do they pay well?
Yes.
They make you, like, sign on a contract basis, or are you just a regular payroll employee?
No, I'm contract for now, but the way they've been talking, after I gave my initial demo, a couple guys asked me what I was doing. Drexel has a co-op program, which is basically like you take 6 months off and go work full-time somewhere. And after my demo, a lot of people, a bunch of different guys, came up and talked to me. My demo was for a bunch of the anti-tampering department, security department. So there was a bunch of guys from Florida, Iowa, all over, different Lockheed chapters or whatever. So they all came up and confronted me, asked me what I was doing. So I think I might have a normal job after this contract.
Cool. So do you think that you're going to make Lockheed like a career? You know, like to the point to where you retire? Or?
I mean, I'd like to. The environment there is real nice and lax. Everybody, like my laptop, I've got junk written all over the back of it. I like to paint. I painted some pretty angry paintings on the back, burning people, and, you know, the typical hacking stuff, whatever.
Right.
But they all, my teacher said I should cover it up, but they all thought it was really cool.
Yeah.
So it's just a nice environment. I'd take that over any, you know, white-collar cubicle thing.
Well, I got a question. Like, for the position you're in, what type of security clearance and security backgrounds did you have to go through prior to working there?
Oddly enough, I don't go there very often. I work from home most of the time.
Right.
I help manage a movie theater my best friend owns. I've known him for like ever. And whenever, you know, he can't, I go there and I help manage. And that doesn't take really too much time. You just need to be there and oversee stuff. So I kind of work from there off my laptop with the wireless.
Nice.
So they allow you to do a lot of your work from anywhere you have internet access?
Exactly, yeah.
And you get paid the big bucks, so that's insanely cool.
Yeah, well, this is just a contract. I'm sure once I'm actually working for them, I'll have to check in, you know, and all that all stuff.
So do you have any idea what prompts them to come after you? Do you have, like, obscenely good grades or high test scores or...
Well, no, I think it was because my teacher, he asked the class, you know, like, all right, who knows this, this, and this, and it was like shell scripting, programming in Java and C and some other stuff that's really not too relevant to reverse engineering. Reverse engineering is pretty much its own category. But, you know, he could just, I guess he overheard the junk I was talking about, the website that I help run, so he just kind of grabbed me on instinct, I guess. Because that was one of the things Lockheed actually asked him in the very couple of days. They were like, well, how do you go about finding somebody who would be a good reverse engineer? And he just typically outlined a stereotypical hacker.
Right.
You know, somebody who's going to, like, forget to feed themselves when something really cool pops up.
I'm sure we've all been there before.
Yeah, I know I've been up for the past 4 days because I can't sleep. This is my first DEF CON I'm going to.
Wow.
Really hyped over that.
Well, I'll make sure you bring a case of beer. BYOP, bring your own pot.
BYOC, bring your own crank. He's been up for 4 days already. He's going to need it.
Yeah, this little baby
Red Bull.
You
probably get some sleep. You really should.
Yeah. I still got some time. I can get sleep.
I mean, DEF CON is good, but it's not that good. We should, you know.
You'll end up probably passing out anyway.
I might do that here.
So... Well, do you plan on going to the other thing that happened there at DEF CON, the Black Hat?
Black Hat.
The what?
Do you plan on going to Black Hat?
What is that?
Which it's like the other program that they're having, like either during DEF CON or right afterwards.
It's actually before DEF CON. What Johnny's talking about is the Black Hat briefings. I guess it's not as well known, but
No, I haven't heard. I kind of heard of it. I didn't know anything specifically.
Well, you know, you got about 10 grand, you can go check it out.
it's a week-long conference held, I believe, at Alexis Park, and the weekend afterward is DEF CON, but it's like the more professional one to DEF CON. It's where all the, you know, law enforcement and CEOs of big companies go to learn about hardcore computer security. It's terribly expensive, and I'm not sure how good it is. I heard that it's unbelievably good, and they teach you some really hardcore stuff, but I've personally never had the cash to go there. But it's supposedly pretty neat. And, of course, you know, you work all week, and then the weekend's DEF CON.
Yeah. Wow. I wish I knew about that.
Well,
you do now.
Yeah, but I've already booked my plane and everything.
That's okay. Tell Lockheed about it. They'll flip the bill.
Yeah, for real.
You know, they might, too.
Yeah, well.
You know. It's all about reverse engineering, baby.
Yeah.
You can be their hacker liaison. Well, what other type of stuff are you getting into? Can you get into, like, any exploits that you're currently involved in? Like, maybe about, like, what you might be doing at DEF CON and stuff?
I don't really know what I'm doing at DEF CON. This is my first one I'm going. But as far as, like, exploits, I really don't go around looking for specific ones. It's just kind of when I get bored, I'll, you know, start disassembling something and looking around for stereotypical places where there would be holes with STR copies and SprintFs.
Right.
Have we actually ever discussed buffer overflows in this show before? I think we may have with this next episode.
Vaguely and brief references.
maybe we should go into like a detailed explanation of exactly what a buffer overflow is and how to go about finding them.
Okay.
Do you think that's a good idea?
Yeah, sure. Usually I'm just going to go through and look for, I use OllyDebug usually to go after programs to disassemble the debugger. And on the right-hand side of the disassembly, it'll show like reference calls to libraries and whatnot. And I'm usually going to target out str copies and sprintfs because I'm pretty new. I read somewhere that's where 80% of the holes are going to be found. So any place I see them, I'm just going to kind of trace them around, see where, you know, where the variables that they're copying, where if there's any user input that can be given to them to overflow them, and if so, if they do any bounds checking beforehand. And that's pretty much how I go about finding them.
And you'd be able to tell all that just from the debugger, the bounds checking and everything?
Well, it's a lot of trial and error. Like, if I see something and it does involve some user input, I'll run the program and put user input in there with a whole, you know, a whole bunch of junk, see if it overwrites anything important, if it overwrites anything at all past where it's supposed to. And that's just a lot of trial and error.
So what do you think is the best reverse engineering tool for either Windows or Linux?
I haven't been able to get my hands on it yet. I haven't really been trying too hard, though. It's SoftIce. I heard that's pretty darn amazing. As of right now, my two favorite disassemblers and debuggers are Debuggy. I forget who makes that. And OllyDebug. You can get them both from Pro Tools, or what is that? ProTools.anticrack.de.
Those free?
Yeah, they're both free.
Excellent.
So,
have you ever used IDA Pro?
I have. I really don't understand what the big deal is about that. It's a real nice disassembler, but I tend to get more done with something interactive that I can run the program with and play with, you know, CPU registers and stack and memory and all that stuff.
Yeah.
I tend to understand more about the program like that. IDEA Pro just gives a static disassembly. It's a really nice assembly. I'm pretty sure it's actually compiled, like, you can just assemble it. But I tend to do better with something that's hands-on. I can see it running in action.
Like simultaneously, or?
Well, I mean, like, if a program were, like, packed or encrypted or something and decrypts itself at runtime,
mm-hmm.
there's not much IDEA Pro is going to be able to do with that. So, I mean, aside from if you're going to go through and look at the decryption algorithm, which could be really, really tedious.
Right.
You could just, you know, if the program decrypts the whole thing all at once at runtime with OllyDebug, you can just run it, pause it, and then reanalyze the code. It'll just re-look at all the code and put it into assembly that you can read,
nice.
Which is really nice.
So are all programs affected by the buffer overflow type exploit?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that. What was that?
Speak up.
Are like all programs are you able to own pretty much all programs using the buffer overflow exploit?
A good amount of programs have buffer overflows in them. They're really, it's real, real easy for a programmer to overlook bounds checking or something as stupid as like input validation. You know, you can, it's a lot of like web hacking goes on. But there's a lot of buffer overflows out there in programs.
Is this just by default or is it just generally overlooked?
It's real easy to forget and just, you know, take user input and copy it to a variable. A lot of programmers are being pushed, you know, like time, get something out the door real quick,
right.
As opposed to like, you know, look over every little detail, make sure that, you know, the second you don't, you know, what's the point of putting something out and meeting your deadline
Whereas, you know, you're going to get all your clients, you know, rooted.
Right.
They're not going to be too happy with that.
So do you think this is more prevalent in Windows since it's not open source?
I don't really know. There's a good amount of Linux disassembly tools for, like, people who distribute Linux binaries and everything, but I couldn't really say.
Okay.
Where would you recommend someone go to learn the basics of reverse engineering and buffer overflows and all that good stuff? Someone who really isn't familiar with it at all and kind of wants to get into it.
Reverse engineering, I would say go to anticracks.de. They have a lot of links to tools, reverse engineering, crack me's, reverse me's, programs that are made to be cracked into and reversed. Mm-hmm. And as far as buffer overflows, I've always referred people to the FRAC article, Smash the Stack. That's nice. Where I learned pretty much everything.
Nice. That was a good article.
Yeah.
Have you ever read the book Exploiting Software by Greg Hoeland?
No.
It's pretty good. I'd recommend it to people, you know.
Yeah, I guess I just refer to the FRAC one because it's free online. You can just Google for that.
Mm-hmm.
True.
There.
How do you spell the Anticrack website URL?
Oh, it's www.anticrack.de.
Okay. So besides the whole Lockheed Martin and the whole buffer overflows reverse engineering thing, is there any other things that you're into?
Aside from hacking, I mean, I do a bunch of like music engineering and whatnot, but nothing really security related. I do some lockpicking too.
That's security related.
Yeah.
That's physical security.
Right. I think I've been subconsciously leaning towards physical security. I feel pretty confident in software. Like that's why I started doing the RF transmitter, trying to play with, you know, car locks and everything. There's a lot of implications that a lot of devices that use radio frequencies that nobody really thinks about, somebody like performing a man in the middle attack.
Oh, very true. Yeah. Oh, very true.
You could just, like, if you know the frequency they're operating on, read whatever information they're, whatever they're spitting out, you know,
right.
Change it a little bit, send it on its way, just a little bit stronger.
Well, now I got a question. The, let's say the door locks at most institutions that have to be tapped with a security badge, that uses RF, right? You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, the ones where... I don't know if that's RF or magnetic.
Hmm.
The ones with, like, the little barcode?
Well, no, there's not like, really a barcode on them. It's just, like, a badge. You know, it's kind of thick. And then you just tap in, and then the light will turn from, like, red to green.
I think it's about a proximity card.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
That's RF, right?
I have no idea. I have one of those cards.
I know you do.
But I can't imagine that they would have an RF transmitter or receiver that small to fit inside, you know, a credit card width.
Hmm.
I'd be damned.
I don't know. That's why I was asking, because there's a lot of like secure facilities that use that. You know,
yeah.
It's like their proprietary source of locking.
Right.
You know what I mean?
I'll look into that. I've never tried that.
Yeah.
I've always just imagined that it was like a magnetic or something.
Hmm.
Yeah, I've never really thought about that.
Yeah, that's immediately what you thought, like what I thought of, like when you said about the car doors.
Right, yeah.
You know, and then RF, you know, and then like, you know, that being, you know, the new wave of lock picking.
Yeah.
And then that's what immediately popped in my head.
Yeah, see, the thing is...
Plus where you're working on.
I guess the main thing they're relying on as... In addition to the whatever security algorithm they're applying with this RF, is it's pretty expensive for somebody to build and really involved to build their own RF transmitter that's going to work on, you know, a wide scale of frequencies. You know, like a lockpick set will get you pretty far with any lock.
Yeah.
You know, making an RF transmitter that's going to do pretty much everything you want is going to be hard to come by.
Because I noticed, like, a lot of big facilities, like the our big college up here, SUNY, they have that. They have proximity locks. And then, let's see, then Lockheed, they have proximity locks here.
Right.
At our Lockheed Sears, so that's what I was asking. And then we have, like, Bay Systems, BAE Systems, we got them and such. And that's what they all use. They all use proximity locks.
Right, yeah, that does sound like RF. If so, I'm about to crack open my card to see what's inside of it.
Yeah, man. You can always get another one.
Yeah.
Shit. Because the thing is, though, the reason why I think that it's like RF is because, like, I've actually, like, let's say you lose, one, right?
Right.
Because you can, the badges have, the badges have, like, certain accesses, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like, one badge is not going to open up all the locks, you know, yet they have badges that will open up all the locks. And up here at the college, like, let's say you lose your badge is automatically on your ID, you know what I'm saying? It's all in the same thing.
Right.
You know, so if you lose your ID, you know, they turn around and they go ahead and they can deactivate that, you know, so I'm just wondering how the heck they deactivate it.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
I look into this.
Yeah. And then, like, let's say, you know, like, one of the students, you know, up here at the college turns around and becomes, like, a hall monitor. You know, they turn around and they pop in his identification number, and then they redo the badge. You know what I'm saying? And they give them back the same badge after they tinker with it, you know, with the machine or whatever.
Right.
And then they give it back to him, and then boom, you know, now he has, like, more access.
I guess the only reason why I always thought it was magnetic was because, like, most credit cards and all that's junk. That's, you know, the magnetic stripe.
Right. But these don't have stripes.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's no barcode, there's no stripe, it's just, you know.
Oh, mine does have a stripe.
Oh, does it?
Yeah, but it is the proximity kind of card dealy thing. You just wave it in front of whatever.
Yeah. But you have a mag stripe on there too, right?
It does, yeah.
Right, but, like, I don't see anything that would read that mag stripe, though.
I don't know. You can buy online, you know, credit card readers.
Right. Yeah, read writers.
I mean, I've tried mine with that, and it does bring up my information.
Cool.
You can buy ones real cheap that are just like, it goes in between your keyboard and your computer, and if
right.
you swipe it, it just puts in all the information, like ASCII to your computer.
Right.
Open up like Notepad or something, it'll spit it out.
Mm-hmm.
That'd be interesting to see what yours does, though.
Wow. But see, the thing is, these don't have mag stripes on them.
Yeah, but I mean, like, even like to just try and like put the card in through that the magnetic reader somehow.
Oh yeah.
To see, maybe there's like a magnetic strip like implanted inside of it somehow.
Wow, I don't even know.
Actually, what you guys are talking about are proximity smart cards. I'm not really an expert on it, but I do know the basics. Basically, whenever you hold up the card to the reader is sending out pulses of electricity on a certain frequency,
mm-hmm.
and that actually powers the chip. The chip itself doesn't use batteries, but it is a fully functional computer, as all smart cards are.
Right.
And when you hold it in front of the reader is pulsing out electrical signals. It uses that electricity, processes some kind of information.
Mm-hmm.
I believe it receives like a key or a challenge, and then spits back, you know, the correct response.
Right.
I believe there are people who have been able to crack these cards.
Right.
And what's really scary about that is because they're proximity cards, if someone has it in their back pocket.
Yeah.
You can like walk past them with a reader, and
so
like,
so it would have to be it would still have to be like on an RF basis.
That would be
right?
RF, right?
Yeah,
any type of electrical pulse is RF.
That's like speed pass.
Exactly. Yeah, that was something else. My boss helps me come up with crazy ideas of what to play with. That was one of the first things he said.
Speed pass. Yeah, that's kind of fucked up because, like, you know, at a college. You know, I mean, people are walking in groups all the time.
Exactly.
You know, and like SUNY up here, I mean, come on. Like, up here in SUNY, like, not a lot of people know this because it's not publicized, like, even to the students, but NASA houses their space chimps here. This is, yeah, like SUNY here in New York, right here, is like where they house the space chimps, you know? And like even that has the proximity locks on them.
Yeah.
You know, and like nobody's allowed down there unless you have like, you know, access.
Right.
You know, because like NASA's pretty big, you know? So, but, and it wouldn't be nothing, you know, at lunchtime, everybody rocks together at lunchtime. You know, just go walk by somebody with one of these readers, you know, that can turn around and, you know, read off of the card.
Right, yeah. How do you
swipe it by somebody's purse, their backpack, their butt, you know?
Wow.
Yeah.
I'm definitely going to play with that.
Yeah, man.
I know in Orlando, Florida, a chain of gas stations called, I believe it was Little Champ, had a little promotion going where what you can do is you can order a keychain. And it will be a proximity smart card chip inside of a little pendant. Mm-hmm. And you can then use the keychain to pay for your things. And it would be attached to your profile, which would have your credit card number. And it would just charge your credit card. But they were like, you know, it's so easy. Just buy your groceries. The guy rings them up. You just wipe your little pass by and leave.
Right.
And I'm thinking to myself,
not only
this is a bad idea, because I'm sure those things are copyable.
Mm-hmm.
But there's no signature required for that. You don't have to sign for it like you do with a credit card.
So somebody like steals it, you know?
Yeah, you're kind of screwed.
Yeah. Luck.
Yeah.
So, you know, for as secure as these things look, I really think it's, and I hate using an old adage, but it's really security through obscurity.
Exactly.
And that's where you come in with preventing reverse engineering.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because right now these things are wide open.
Yeah, the main thing they're relying on is because it's pretty costly for somebody who's going to be doing this as like a hobby, or even with evil intentions, you know, whatever. It's pretty costly to be doing something like this when it's not well known.
Right.
You know, you could be wasting your money just like, you know, following blind paths, you know, they're not going to go anywhere.
Right.
So I guess they're just relying on people to give up and just to play with stuff.
Yeah. I don't know, you know. We're bored.
Exactly.
You know? I mean, that's the biggest problem, you know?
Yeah. I don't
know. We sit at our desk at our dead-end jobs every day. We're bored, you know?
Uh-huh.
Jeez. Or, you know, we're in school, you know, we're sitting in a lecture, you know, we're not really paying attention, we're doodling, and, you know, we're thinking about stuff, you know?
Right.
It's like, wow, you know?
I wonder if...
Yeah. I don't know, that's usually what happens, too.
Yeah.
You know, and then somebody, you know, it'll get into somebody's brain so bad that, you know, they got to actually try it, you know?
And especially like, college, you know. You're sitting there, like, doing something, and, mm-hmm. you know, you got kids sitting around you, and they see you're doing something that cool, they're going to push you to go even further.
Yeah, man.
So it's definitely, you know, there are social benefits to doing this kind of junk.
Yeah. Sometimes college is our worst enemy.
Exactly.
But sometimes, and a lot of times, they're your best friend.
Yeah.
I've seen so many good projects come out of colleges, and, you know, when you think about it, it's pretty obvious why. You have a whole bunch of people who are in their prime. They're, you know, really, really well knowledgeable of stuff because they just learned it, and they got plenty of free time, and that's why you see things like BSD coming out of Berkeley and you know, all these major, major projects and stuff that major corporations have been trying many, many years to do, and some college student pulls it off in like a month or two.
Right.
Right. Yeah, one of the graduate students at Drexel came up with a pretty nice source level anti-buffer overflow project.
Hmm.
It would parse through your C, look for, you know, potential buffer overflows and, you know, fix them for you. And then you could go and compile it and everything would work nice and happy. You wouldn't have any buffer overflows.
Nice.
You know if this was released or not?
Yeah, it's called Gemini. And I'm pretty sure it is released, but there's a good amount of dependencies that it has to go along with it. So it's not exactly the most nimble thing that you'd want to have, you know, in your programming toolkit.
Right, it's not rock solid.
Exactly. Well, it works 100% of the time. It's really nice, but it's just, it's kind of an annoyance to get up and running. And that is for Linux.
Do you know if that's released under the GPL?
I couldn't say.
This is another prime example of college students coming out with some stuff that other people just can't.
Right.
And it's not just that they don't, it's not just that they really can't do it. It's just that corporations are motivated by the wrong thing. They're motivated by money.
Exactly.
And a lot of times, making money means coming out with something real quick that sucks.
Exactly, and it's going to have buffer flows because people are pushing themselves and not, you know, time over quality.
Right.
I was actually reading about Hewlett-Packard, how now with their programmers, they're actually putting two people per terminal, and they're forcing them only to work 40 hours a week, and if you work overtime 1 week, you can't work it another week. And they're now taking these philosophy that, you know, a relaxed, even pace will provide a better program than a harried, all-night pace.
Right. That's what Lockheed's always pushed with me. Like, they wanted me to be able to work from home and on my own hours
right.
to keep this a hobby for me. Because, you know, if you're pushing somebody in a cubicle, like, do this in this amount of time, you know, it's not going to be as good as they possibly do, but if you keep it like a hobby, like this is right now to me, you know, this is just fun and games still, then, you know, they're willing to pay me for these fun and games because it has, you know, output that they're going to like, you know,
right.
They're getting a lot out of this.
Just because of the department that you're in.
Exactly.
Because not all of Lockheed's like that.
Yeah.
Like, that's something I definitely want to, like, tell our listeners out there. Don't be misconstrued, you know, that, you know, you're going to go to Lockheed and it's going to be laid back.
Yeah, Lockheed, a lot of it is white-collar, really secure,
mm-hmm.
but I'm pretty sure this is just the department I'm in.
Yeah, just happen to be in the deadhead department.
Yeah, there's a lot of really cool guys there.
Hell yeah.
I'm going to have to disagree with how working only 40 hours a week is going to increase productivity.
I don't think so.
I know that, at least in my own projects, if you're limited to how much you can work a day, you're going to sit back and wait till 5 o'clock to roll around.
Yeah.
But if you're really involved in a project, and it's 5:30, 6:30, and you're really into it, you're not going to want to stop. And if you do stop and you come back the next day, you're not going to be into it nearly as much as if you had just worked the whole night through.
Right.
Mm. I mean, it's well documented that companies like, you know, Netscape, when they were making their Navigator software, had people who were there, you know, 90 hours in 1 week. And they just, you know, fell asleep at their desks when they were done and, you know, woke up and picked back up. And they were really involved in the project. So
right.
I can't tell you how many times I pulled out all manners working on software, and the results are normally pretty good.
Yeah. But, I mean, like, there's no good way to like, enforce people to enjoy their work. You know, I guess that's what HP was trying to do, was just to, you know, try and think of a way to make it a more relaxed environment in the workspace. You know, I can't really think of another way that you can do that other than maybe, like, get rid of deadlines.
Get rid of deadlines, stuff never happens, though.
Yeah. Gotta have deadlines.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, sure, you know, make it relaxed, but if someone wants to work overtime and they're really into it and they're actually getting stuff done, by all means, let them. Don't say, oh, you had 40 hours this week, you had to go home.
Right.
That's not going to get you anywhere.
Well, you know, personally, I have a few ideas of how to make the workplace more relaxed, but it's never going to happen.
Yeah.
Do we want to hear them, Maxis?
Definitely something to strive for.
Yeah.
Yes.
For our sake.
Yeah, well, for starters, you know, company lunches at Hooters, you know.
No. Pole dances, or a pole dance on every desk is what I was thinking.
Yeah,
oh, come on. No one would get any work done.
But it would be relaxed.
We're slipping off topic here.
Yeah.
I got a question for you. Do you ever, this is kind of off topic, but I think you're the kind of person that would have a good answer for this. Do you foresee open source software dominating the market to the point where commercial software is no longer profitable?
No, I don't think that's ever going to go anywhere. I mean, of course it's going somewhere, but you know, money is always going to be money. There's always going, I mean, if it's open source, who's going to pay for it?
Well, that's exactly what I mean.
Yeah, I don't...
The point where commercial software is not going to be profitable.
No, I don't... People are always going to want to make money. You know, I'm sure even people who make open source software would wish that they could make some money off of it. You know, everybody wants to see some sort of profit from, you know, their work.
Yeah.
But there are those, you know, few golden people who do enjoy just making stuff free that's, you know, going to benefit a lot of people, and they just like to see the benefits, you know, what other people can do with it, that software.
Right. Yeah, and going further off topic with open source and money, you can't charge licensing fees for open source software. What I've seen a lot more and more is where companies, for a fee, will set stuff up for you. And that, you know, if open source does take off, like, you know, I hope it does, that's going to be more of a market than really selling software. It's going to be people offering to set it up and administer it for you rather than sell it to you until you, you know, basically screw off. You know, so there's always that chance there for people to make money. It's just...
Well, with the open source, you know, there's always a chance of somebody who's buying the software, you know, somebody leaks the source. You know, that happens with closed source stuff. So, you know, there's always going to be some jerk that's going to screw everything up. I mean, open source would definitely be something to strive for. In my opinion, at least.
I really think, and people may think I'm a little bizarre for this one, but I think that the whole open source movement is a really big step towards world peace, because when you really think of it, you're having a whole bunch of people working in their spare time, all for a common goal, with no self-interest. They're all doing it to just help other people. And they're spending their time, sometimes even their money, to do something that really provides no positive gain for them, just for the goodwill towards others.
Sounds almost communistic.
Yeah.
Oh.
Well, it's a scientific breakthrough, you know, because science is best done when people around the world work together.
Right.
Yeah.
I would also like to point out here that people that work on, you know, things like the Apache Project and other projects like that, they're not working, you know, solely for the helping others. You know, again, it goes back to what the internet is made for anymore, and that's what their whole, you know, motivation there probably is. They just want faster delivery of you know, said items. And if you don't listen to 13, you have no idea what I'm talking about, so I'm just going to shut up now.
Well, I don't know. Is that about it, fellas? Do you want to wrap it up, or?
Not yet. Spiff, what other things you got hiding? What other stuff you want to talk about?
I don't know. That's about it for as far as the security.
Okay, I got a question for you. You said that you've only been into computer security and hacking for under a year.
Right.
And you seem to be a lot more advanced than other people I know who've been in it for a lot longer than that. What's your secret for learning stuff so quick?
I don't know. Hack the Site really helped. It was like, you know, it was a game environment, so it was real fun. And, you know, I remember in the very beginning, I got up to, like, level, for the basic ones, I got up to, like, level 5 or something on my own with, like, no knowledge of anything.
Cool.
Level 5 require you need to know about like refers with that, and I knew like basic HTML, and that was about it. So the forums really helped, and you can go in the chat room and ask people questions. And then, you know, after I beat all the levels there, you know, it just gives you a real, like, I guess like a great taste. You know, you want more. So I went around, you know, to other websites, played them. Then I started to go after, you know, I mean, games are games, and I wanted to start to get into real shit. So I went to, like, Security Focus and started looking at, like, example exploits, testing them on myself, you know, setting up vulnerable servers just to see how they worked, you know, buffer overflows, that kind of stuff, reading the FRAC, smash the stack that had a couple example buffer overflows to play with in there. And then just, you know, I guess it's kind of like a mindset some people have from the get-go. You know, somebody places you with a problem, you just kind of think of different ways to circumnavigate it without actually solving it the way they want.
Well, you mentioned earlier that you're one of the few people who would be willing to help a complete and total noob who's only interested in hacking a Hotmail account or something of that sort.
Exactly.
What do you tell to people who just got done watching the movie Hackers and think that hacking is something you can walk up to a computer and 10 seconds later have full access of it? I mean, how do you get someone from that level to getting to the very beginnings of what it's really like? Because that's got to be a big, you know, big pill to swallow for them whenever they probably think it's totally different.
Yeah. Some people take to it pretty well, and other people, they take that mindset that, you know, hacking is just typing in a bunch of garbage into, like, Telnet or something, and, you know, magic, you get, like, mouse control or something. And those people tend to have a harder time accepting how hacking works, and it's not as, you know, the benefits aren't as great right away. But I really enjoy teaching. I kind of almost considered going into teaching, like, security kind of junk. So I tend to get people along pretty quick. And I've had, you know, a couple people that I've, you know, taught go on to find bug tracks, zero days or O days of their own, whatever you call them.
Nice.
I just feel, you know, like if somebody's, you know, if you have knowledge and somebody else taught you it, or if you got it from the internet, it's not like you learned it yourself. You might as well just make it available and pass it on to other people.
Now, what do you make out of all the recent laws that have been passed to make things like reverse engineering and all that stuff a horrible, horrible crime?
I don't know. Like, lockpicking is pretty illegal. I just purchased a lockpick set online, and afterwards I looked at the terms of whatever, and it basically says you have to be a locksmith or a police officer, all this crazy junk, to buy it. And, you know, I can't walk around with this thing, like, legally. If a cop stops me and sees me, you know, carrying this with me, he could, like, you know...
Yeah, it's possession of burglary tools.
Right. And, you know, that's illegal. I don't feel it should be. I feel like, you know, if lockpicking was more legal, people would, there'd be more of a drive for, you know, companies to make more secure locks. And I feel the same way with hacking. Like, if everybody knew how to hack, then it would be a fair playing ground. Everybody would know how to defend themselves, and it would just be, like, right now, for the most case, most people who know how to hack are going to have black hat, if not, they're gray hat, if not black hat tendencies. Most people are in a gray area. But, you know, it's not good having black hats that know way more than the security people. So, you know, I'm just trying to, any information I come across, I want to give to everybody else in case if they don't already know it.
Well, why do you think it is that the people who actually are in the computer hacking oftentimes know so much more about the things they do than to big business systems administrators and law enforcement?
I think that's because of what we said before. Big businesses are going to want to go with people who have, you know, degrees and all this junk. And, you know, a degree is a piece of paper. Mm-hmm. I could care less if I drop out of college right now. I'm pretty sure I could get a good amount of jobs with people. It's like a stereotype, but what I've come across, the people who are, like, into this field are generally not amazingly scholastic. I know I myself did not do very well with college, and I could kind of care less. Because, you know, this stuff is just way more fun, way more interesting, and I feel it's going to have way more impact and implications in my life. So I just kind of set my priorities that way.
what's your advice to someone who's interested in making a career out of computer hacking? Is it better to freelance, to find a big company and convince them to hire you?
You're going to have to go with freelancing. I mean, without, if you just go up to a company and say, like, can I work for you? They're going to say, like, what experience do you have? So I found if you just, go around the internet, you see, like, maybe a couple SQL injection holes somewhere, or download some free trial software and play around with it, find some holes, just be real nice, tell the company first, wait till they release a patch, release a bug track so that you not only got the company who made the software that you found a hole in, their attention. You release the bug track, you get a good amount of people's attention. Like after I posted the WebCT and the SCT.com's software on BugTrack, I had a couple system administrators from actual colleges call me up and ask me for ideas on how to secure their server better, which I thought was like amazingly cool.
Cool.
Because, I'm really young with this junk, and having like professionals, that was just amazing.
Yeah, then I want to put in my little two cents on how to become a better hacker. Don't get caught.
Right. Well, don't do anything illegal to start with.
Well, yeah.
It's really hard, though. I mean, even the scenario you gave, you download some free trial software, you find a hole and contact the company. I've heard of situations very similar where someone tried to get them sued over that.
DMCA?
Yeah.
I mean, you're trying to just raise some awareness, and what if you got some company who would much rather see you in jail than fix their own software?
Right.
I mean, how do you deal with that?
I've only had to deal with it with Drexel so far, and as of now, I guess I wouldn't really care if I got kicked out of college. I guess if I wanted to defend myself against that, I'd, just try and raise some sort of ruckus, tell local newspapers and whatnot. Because, I mean, the company itself, of course, is going to have all sorts of, they'll get angry at you, and sometimes they'll get angry at you and flip out. But if you the general population, when presented with this situation, it makes you out to look, amazing. You've, like, the nicest implications. You told them before you told anybody else. You're giving them ideas on how to fix it. What more can you really do?
Right.
I mean, if there was something more, I would gladly do it, but I think the main problem is it's such a new field. There's no standard, like, this is illegal, that's not illegal. It's so gray.
Well, I mean, I know that there's an old, I'm trying to find the word for it. It's not a stereotype, but like an old...
axiom.
Something like that, where, find a company, hack them, and then try to get a job there, but that sounds like you're flirting with disaster. I mean, where do you draw the line? I know some people that used to go war driving, find open access points, fire off letters to the CEO, trying to solicit for, penetration testing jobs.
Right. I've had a couple of people that, like, I was helping out, like teaching and whatnot, find holes in some software, and what I said was just to be on the safe side, because I don't really care what happens to me, but when I'm telling somebody else, advice on a legal issue like this, I want to be really, really cautious, because I don't want to be an asshole and get somebody in jail. So what I told the person was to do was, like, send out an anonymous email at first, just kind of like, say, here's a hole, I'm willing to fix it, I don't want any trouble, you can disregard this and fix it yourself, or I'd be willing to help you. And they actually did offer him a job afterwards.
How big of a hole was it that we're talking about?
It was actually a really small hole for them to offer him a job. It was a cross-site scripting. But I guess that has implications, Everything can be worked its way up to real bad.
Yeah, I'm personally trying to find some company willing to hire me, and I don't really have the qualifications they're looking for. So that's why I keep asking all these questions. And
right.
Plus, I'm sure there's a lot of people out there listening who are in the same boat, because most computer hackers are poor. they just do it for the fun, you know?
Yeah.
So, any projects you're working on right now? Anything that we'd find interesting?
Well, I'm real busy, you know, like I have Lockheed Crab, I do the managing for that theater, my best friend, and I'm trying to start up this new website that's like free of any politics, free of, I'm trying to get all the developers and moderators for the website to be pretty mature because there was a problem with, you know, high school teenage drama going on at Hack the Site.
Right.
It's kind of annoying. I mean, Hack the Site is great. Like, it has this awesome community. It's almost like a family. People hang out in the IRC enough, you know, they get to learn enough about these people. It's like, it's great. But sometimes we've had developers turn on us, you know, say they hacked us when they have FTP access to begin with. I'm not really sure how that works. But, whatever.
Hey, you give me a root and I owned you.
Sweet. I love that game. But yeah, we're taking extra precautions with this new website. We're actually one of the developers that's helping make this has made a front end, kind of like a GeoCities FTP, so that we can monitor everything that's being uploaded. Kind of scary, but you know, when you have people from the inside hacking you, you can't do too much.
Well, that's definitely true. So you're not really involved in anything special nowadays? I mean, obviously the website's going to be a big project.
Yeah, the website, I have some really nice ideas as far as, like I'm not too good with, I can program in PHP and everything, but I don't really like doing web challenges and stuff like that. I'm more on the programming and system end of junk. I've got a couple like real buffer overflow levels I want to do, and some insane application programs where, you know, it'll just be a basic like, give me the password. You know, like programs that have like a, like the program will be encrypted, but it'll decrypt each line of the program as it needs each line to be executed, which I've never seen in any program protection scheme. I think that'll be pretty sick.
Do you actually expect anybody to be able to hack it, though? I mean, generally, the application challenges are supposed to be at least semi-easy to beat.
Oh, well, anything's, I mean, doable. If I were to do this, the thing I'm talking about, I don't really want to give away the way to get around my protection scheme. But there is a fairly easy way to get around the thing I just mentioned.
Well, that's all that matters, then, you know, because no one wants to go to a website where all the challenges are not going to be very easy to beat. I mean,
oh, no.
You got to have at least a few of it.
There's going to be a gradient. I mean, the one I talked about was the one I was most proud of. That'll obviously be the most challenging and have the most points at the end. Whatever.
Well, you know, when you're on the subject of hack this site, has anyone ever actually hacked the actual website?
The website or the web, like, server? Like, rooted us or just, like, got Apache?
Yeah, just, like, you know, either defaced or, like, whatever.
Yeah, no defacing, actually. The only defacings we ever had were from people with FTP access giving out FTP access, or, you know, people just turning on us.
Okay, like,
we've had SQL injection, because there's a lot of realistic missions that involve SQL injection, and I guess our users, you know, we teach them well, they turn around and they find real nice holes in our security. And they'll get, like, you know, a lot of information from that.
Right.
We've never had been a... Actually, once we were rooted by a cPanel O-Day, Zero-Day, whatever you call it. But that was just some random kid who got the Zero-Day from, like, some underground group. Had no, no reason for doing what he did. And he just basically destroyed our server. He just, you know, formatted it, which is real nice of him.
Total black hat.
Yeah. Well,
sounds like a Romanian.
I mean,
we always blame the Romanian.
It is hackthesite.org. I wasn't too upset. We had backups, you know.
Unlike Scope 6.
back up your shit, people.
Right.
Yeah, I lost all my security suit code, so... Oh, well.
Damn.
You know, the best backup in the world is a tablet of paper and a pen. Write your code down.
At least make some printouts and stick it, like, somewhere special.
Yeah.
Because hard drives do crash and servers do get rooted.
And servers do don't go down.
And CDR,
or in my case, catch on fire.
Yeah, catch on fire.
Did that service catch on fire?
Yeah, the Nova, our server, oddly enough, caught on fire. Nova, you know, the sun, Nova, fire.
Yeah, fire.
I hope you got pictures of that.
Shit. I think he was worried more about a fire extinguisher.
Oh, come on. You have to take pictures of that.
No, it was actually a power surge, but it's close enough.
Oh.
A $5 preventable power surge.
Oh.
Yeah. I think I would have been proud of having a computer catch on fire.
Hey, I've done it, but...
I've never heard of it.
Just let a computer sit in a closet for 3 years gathering dust and plug it in.
There you go. That'll work. Or, you know, underwater.
Underwater, that always works. Or just unhook the fan. Run that big puppy for about 6 months.
Fans aren't important. I have two that have never had a fan on them.
Ugh. Actually, the older machines, like 46 and stuff, you really don't need fans. Those newer chips are pushing so hard.
Yeah.
Anyway, off topic.
Yeah. We seem to have that problem.
When do we generally have a topic, though, on this show?
Yeah, really,
oh,
though.
True, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah,
no, come on now.
Off topic, what topic?
Topic? We're unscripted, baby.
Now we're being off topic, we're being off topic.
Are any of you guys going to DEF CON? Off topic.
Yeah. Hairball, I believe, is.
I'm desperately trying, but desperately failing.
I am.
Nexus is not.
Who is that? Who is?
Dom. Dom Nexus.
Alright.
Yeah, we should meet up. Like, I'm going to be the only one there. My dad and grandpa are going off to gamble, so.
Alright, yeah. There's a bunch of Hack the Site people. You can, I'll contact you later, I guess.
Alright. I'll be on HBX's channel on internet, so.
IRC?
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I know I'll probably, you know, yell at this about this for later, but, you know, speaking of Nova and et cetera, we're still well short of the goals to bring the new shell server online, so if you can, you know, if you have an extra buck or two, send it our way, please.
Yeah, anybody out there, send in money, please.
Yeah, so
I could use a few dollars myself.
Yeah.
Oh, who couldn't use a fucking bunch of money, you know?
What, do you guys need a web server? Or?
Plug.
Well, yeah, I mean, if you happen to find one in the garbage over there at work, you know, do please grab it and, you know, send it along. That would be nice.
You know, when they upgrade from their 12 gigahertz to their 12.5 gigahertz next week.
Oh, sweet.
I mean, I know what they throw away, and they throw away some pretty sweet shit over there, dude. I mean, shit, even if you just go rifle for parts, shit. Good God.
We don't want to put his job at stake.
No.
He's caught taking a ramship out of work and get canned, you know?
Oh, no. Cases, surge protectors.
I'll make enough of Lockheed. I could donate to you guys.
What was that?
I make enough of Lockheed. I can donate to you guys.
Hell yeah.
We're going to hold you to it.
Yeah, you know, a couple of ICBM circuit boards, you know? maybe a couple of cockpit panels, you know.
I'll see what I can find in the trash. I thought I saw one of them yesterday.
Hey, I got some little DARPA documents for us.
Yeah.
I've already done no TL time, no thank you.
Yeah, you know, Osama's satellite phone number.
Yeah.
Everyone has that already.
I have that in my cell phone.
Yeah, you know.
Dude, I call him daily.
Oh,
not real, right. Like. like anybody listening out there, anytime you guys want to send us equipment, go to the website. All the info is up there.
Yeah, we'll take just about everything.
Anybody out there that has an extra server that they would like to use as an HBX server, you know, contact Hairball or Nexus.
Yeah, that's actually a project. I don't think I mentioned this on the radio show yet, but
go for it.
Something HBX is planning on doing. A lot of people have equipment that they're not using, but they still want to keep a hold of it because it's, you know, not free to obtain in the future. What we'd like to do is basically you have your box on your end, on your bandwidth, and we can have one of our administrators, I'm sure Nexus will be up for this, to connect to it and configure it as an HBX shell server. And basically you can admin your own HBX box and it'll be on like an HBX affiliate server. We'll give it an HBX planet name and address and slap it online and you can, you know, have physical control over it and our HBX administrators can make sure it runs smoothly and everyone's happy.
And then you too can be mad at Romanian.
I swear, my grave marker is going to say, damn the Romanians.
Or, it was the Romanians' fault.
Actually, we need to get some bumper stickers made up.
I actually have some, that's the sad part.
Got side bounce?
Friend.
We're too nerdy for our own good, I swear.
It's inside humor.
To a very large audience.
Yes. And any Romanian listeners who happen to be listening, we're terribly sorry for any, I guess, insult. And you can help heal this wound by donating to us.
Okay, we're so off topic, it's not funny. Spiff-O-Matic. You still here?
Yeah.
Uh-oh, that's not good.
What?
No, he's still here.
Huh?
There he is.
Yeah.
You thought you left us.
Nah.
Anything else you want to talk about?
Not really offhand. Having not slept for 4 days might have a tribute to that.
There's got to be something else you want to talk about. I heard some rumors you're up to some stuff.
There's a little hole I'm working on with AOL Instant Messenger.
Yeah, just a little one.
Just a small, very small.
Yeah, hairpin.
Yeah. Not having AOL's complete permission to give out the details to this. I'm still working on that with them. I want to unveil this at DEF CON. But it's a pretty large hole now that I think about it.
You just thinking about it now?
Just thinking about it now, yeah. It'll, it's a remote buffer overflow. It'll give me I have access to overwrite the EIP, so I can execute whatever I want. So,
speaking of that, I was actually reading about one way to protect against buffer overflows on your server is making your stacks non-executable.
Right.
But wouldn't that prevent a lot of programs from working?
Yeah, so I was just gonna say.
Okay.
That's for Linux, right? That's a kernel patch.
Yeah.
Yeah. I heard about a lot of stuff with that, but in this particular situation, this is for Windows, AOL Messenger clients only.
Which is just basically about every Joe Schmo out there.
Right, there's not too many Linux users.
Mm-hmm.
I also clarify, it wouldn't work on Game or Trillian or...
Nope, this is specifically for AOL Messenger.
Which is all right, because that's the most popular client.
Yeah, and of course, you know, hey, it's another exploit for Windows. As if there's not enough already.
Right.
So what amount of detail would you be comfortable going into?
As of right now, not too much. It's a pretty straightforward hole, and any information I provide towards it is going to lead people towards finding this. I'm sure people are going to be finding it as I speak right now. I just don't want to be attributing any, you know,
right,
loss of life because of this.
Loss of life.
Hey, you never know. MS Blaster took on the power grid. I mean, come on.
Yeah, the AOL goon squad.
Right.
Well, after DEFCON, do you think you'd be able to talk about it more since he'll be patched?
As long as it's patched, I'll talk about it as much as I want, yeah.
Cool.
Well,
because yeah. I would definitely like to hear about it.
Yeah.
Just to clarify, though, basically what you're saying is the hole in AOL would allow someone with the knowledge to exploit it to access basically any machine who is running the client software?
Exactly. Well, yeah. there's a couple ways to prevent it, but by default, AIM's configured to be exploitable with this.
Too much information. Also, just a quick question. I remember when Trillian was fairly new, I was using it, and I was on, I think, Cyber Army's IRC channel, and someone sent me a private message, and in that private message, it caused the buffer overflow.
Right.
Using your exploit, would it be you sending a specific kind of message, or you, like, sending a command to the computer, or what?
Or feel free not
TMI,
to answer that.
TMI.
Probably getting too much detail there.
TMI.
Yeah,
I'm going to decline on that one.
You kind of got to step back and figure that even after they, you know, release a patch for this, it doesn't mean everyone's going to be patched for it.
That's the thing, yeah. When I do release, I'm going to talk about it at DEF CON. I'm setting up a bot I programmed in Perl that's going to be run back here where I'm at so that I can demonstrate this on people if they want. I'll get their permission on tape so I don't get taken away by feds.
Right.
Does this only pertain to one version of Windows, or is it all of them?
No, it's all Windows. The thing that's annoying is the EIP moves around for, you know, different versions of Windows. So I wrote my exploit to pertain to that.
How did AOL take the news when you told them about this? Did they,
generally, how did the call start, you know?
I got different answers. At first, I think I was talking to their security people. They said they really didn't care. They were just happy that they heard about this and that they wanted me to give them the full information. And I have written a patch for this, and I was going to send it to them. And then I called back again. My girlfriend was really worried about, you know, me getting sent off to jail. I talked to other people who were also worried for myself being sent off to jail.
All right.
So I specifically asked for their legal department, and they basically flipped out at me, said they'd throw every bit of knowledge with legal loopholes they had at me if I did such a thing. So I think right now my course of action is I'll demo it from my PDA, sending, you know, using my aimbot to demonstrate this for people at DEF CON, and then once the patch is out, I'll release a bug track with as little information as I can. You know, I'm not too sure yet. I think I'll be comfortable talking about the exploit itself, but I'm not going to be giving out any example exploit code.
All right.
Yeah, but I mean, you kind of get to realize that if people listen to this episode, they're already, you know, playing with AIM, they're going to figure it out, and it's going to be on Packet Storm in no time at all.
Of course. But there's nothing I can do to stop that. If I were just to say, even if I were, like, making this whole thing up, even if I were to say that there is a hole, I'm sure people are going to look for one, and they'll probably find ones, maybe the same one I'm talking about, maybe different ones. You know, it's just, it's going to be sparking people's interest, and that's not really my doing.
Yeah,
which division of AOL did you contact when you reported the bug?
I just emailed them and gave them my phone number saying, you know, I found a hole. I want to talk to you guys. What do you want to do? I put the ball in their field. You know, I didn't want to...
Right.
So did they call you back or did they email you?
They did call me back.
Nice.
Were they like, hi, this is AOL. Give us the code.
Yeah. No, they weren't that demanding.
Hmm.
It sounded like a security or IT kind of guy.
Cool.
You know, I'm actually willing to bet that the person who called you, you know, really didn't understand the impact of what it was you're reporting to them.
Yeah, well, as of right now, they don't know what type of hole this is.
They don't?
No, I didn't.
They understand what it affects, right?
Mm-hmm. Huh. Like, they don't know where it's at. They don't know.
Damn.
I wanted to keep it real, you know.
Right.
All right, so basically, you're the only guy on the planet right now that really knows about this at this point.
Well, or so I think.
Well, you know,
plenty of people who have this.
I mean, to be completely honest, like, if I would have stumbled upon this, I mean, I think I would have kept it under my head and not told a damn soul.
Exactly. So
you see what I'm saying? And, like, I mean,
yeah.
I do have to.
People who have it.
Yeah, I mean, I do got to commend you for doing that, but, man, I would have kept my head. I wouldn't even have told anybody about this shit.
Personally, I think the first people I would contact would have been, like, the news, you know, the, you know, Associated Press, because I just have no love lost for AOL.
Right, but, I mean, when you do something like that, it's just going to leave it open for somebody else, and then they could either post the packet storm, get everybody screwed over, or, you know, try and do at least what they think is right.
Right.
Like, my only goal is, you know, DEFCON's going to be cool as hell. I want to be able to, you know, have some fun down there with this, get some sort of recognition for my work.
Right.
And at the same time, not be in jail and, you know, try and cater to what AOL wants and not, you know, piss them off.
Right.
Yeah. Well,
that is piss them off anyway.
Yeah. I mean, you're going to have some fun until, you know, the four guys in the black suit show up and, you know.
Well, we're talking about DEF CON here, so it might be 40.
Yeah.
I mean, come on, let's be real here.
Well, no, we're talking DEF CON. It's going to be, you know, 40 guys in tactical gear with AK-47.
No. I mean, see, DEF CON, I mean, they play spot the Fed, and it's really easy to spot the Fed because, you know, the Feds are the ones that aren't drunk. You know what I'm saying? So they're really easy to spot. I mean, shit.
Yeah.
Well, I mean,
they have that contest, right? Spot the Fed.
Oh, yeah, they do. It's hilarious.
Oh.
Okay, now, what I want to clarify for all our listeners is the whole white hat thing. If someone wanted to be a black hat and they had a copy of this exploit,
mm-hmm.
just imagine the worm they could write with it.
Yeah.
Picture infecting someone with an AOL client with code that will contact every single person on that person's buddy list
mm-hmm.
and infect them as well.
And then on and on from there.
You'd be able to, you know, and of course I want to stress that this is a very bad idea and I would never in a million years suggest someone do this, but you would be able to theoretically drop the entire AIM network almost instantaneously.
Well,
furthermore,
well, that.
Go ahead.
Oh, no, go ahead. Sorry.
Furthermore, if you also include a payload in this worm to either steal financial data or erase the person's computer who it was running on, you could do billions, if not trillions, of dollars in damage. I know of people who use AIM in places that, you know, are shouldn't be aiming from.
Right.
I mean, Biggie, don't you use AIM from the cash machines at Radio Shack?
Yes, I did.
I mean, I know people who work for the government organizations and use AIM from within inside. Schools and businesses use AIM. I mean, millions and millions and millions of people use it. And everyone, you know, with the degrees of separation has everyone else on their buddy list. And yet, Spiff is going around and reporting it to AOL and making sure it doesn't release the exploit and doing everything in his power to make sure this doesn't happen. I really commend him for that.
Yeah. I mean, people don't even understand, like, how serious this is. You know, I mean, like, what does it do? It drops you in as, like, root, right? Onto their box.
Whatever
basically.
Permissions that the AIM is being run at, that's how buffer overflow works.
Right, which is basically everybody out there runs as administrator anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
And it'll let you execute any shell you want to put it, so, you know, you can give, like, a wind bind, or if they're behind a router, you know, like a reverse connection.
Right.
Whatever you want.
So, I mean, if Spiff ends up going to jail behind this, you know, I mean, this is, like, really dead wrong. You know, I mean, people need to understand, like, what, you know, his intentions are with this. You know, I mean, if he was really going to do something, you know, with this hole, instead of reporting it to AOL, you know, he wouldn't even be coming out or even contacting AOL at all.
What do you
know? I mean, this shit would be already packaged and stormed, you know.
Yeah. Well, and then another thing I can really see that is a serious possibility with this, like with, you know, the DCOM bugs, constant DCOM bugs, it's become a packet kiddie's paradise. I mean, they're writing payloads for this, and they're building packet nets, and that's what I can see this, you know, becoming possibly. It's just another source for, you know, the 13-year-old packet kiddie whose girlfriend ticks them off, so he wants to DOS her offline. You know, that's what I see this becoming.
Right.
That's why I didn't release the DCOM scanner.
Hmm.
Yeah, really.
That would have been bad.
I mean, even the company who did DCOM, which I believe was Last Stage of Delirium, I believe they notified Microsoft 30 days before they released that stuff.
Yeah.
And they still didn't have a patch on in time.
Yeah. That's why I actually wrote a patch for AIM.
They'll probably not release it. I mean...
No, I mean, they usually do version upgrades, right? They don't do patches. Right.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. Like, how is AIM set up? Is it set up to where it'll automatically update anybody that logs in on AIM, or what?
Well, it'll come up and notify. It'll say, like, there's a new version. Do you want to upgrade?
But, well, they better upgrade. They should, like, force the upgrade issue here.
On dial-up internet don't want to download a 10-megabyte file.
Right. And I don't know if AIM is set up to have those kind of permissions to just give that sort of a command to your computer.
Right. I mean, considering this, though, you know, in certain instances, you know, like
you'd
these,
just,
you know,
like,
you would automatically want the update.
Yeah, you'd think screen saying the implications, you know, like not let anybody online unless if they get this new one.
Right. I mean, imagine if the kids that wrote Blaster, you know, told Microsoft about it first.
Yeah.
You know, and allowed them to fucking, you know, gave them a patch and everything.
Yeah.
And
you know,
actually, I believe Blaster was the DCOM, wasn't it?
Yeah, Blaster was DCOM.
And they had a 30-day notice on that, so I believe the real question is, what if Blaster was an O-Day?
Right.
It would not knock down the East Coast power grid, or probably knock down the whole world's power grid.
Right.
Nobody ever upgrades. I mean, like, people, it's, like, Windows is set up so it has that, like, that little icon down on the bottom right.
Right. And everyone ignores.
By default, Windows, the start bar is blue. That little icon is blue.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody notices it.
Wow.
It should be like phosphorescent orange.
It's just like, yeah, take up your...
Well, you know, then it just falls in the hands of the software companies.
Yeah.
You know, to notify its users that these things are out here, you know. I mean, people are out there finding holes, you know, and notifying them, you know. And it's the software companies that are not notifying its clients.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I mean, and look what happened. The damn power grid goes down. Like, a week or two after that? Like, a whole bunch of places overseas lost power? You know?
I think it was a few days after that.
Yeah, man. I mean, this is all as a result of a fucking program, you know?
Yeah, and Johnny, I'd like to bring something up. You say that maybe AIM should have the capability to force an update on you to auto-update itself.
Yeah.
I don't see how that could be, you know, that could create a bigger security bug than this.
If
someone could possibly run
that. Then it just boils down to encryption, you know.
Exactly. Yeah, well, I mean, still, somebody's going to figure that out eventually, and they're going to exploit it, and then they're going to install their own version of AIM on your computer.
Right.
And in the middle, baby.
Well, how do you know that that's not already taking place, and nobody's releasing that? You know.
I mean, like, any type of feature that, like, is ever installed on any piece of software, you know, any feature is going to have... It's just more code to find a hole in.
I mean, God forbid, you know, I mean, the most beautiful job in the repair in the whole world is having a computer repair job.
Oh.
You know? I mean, come on. I mean, no offense, Hairball, you know, but come on. You know? Well, what better middleman is that?
Yeah, man, computer repairmen, if they wanted to be naughty, they got full access.
Damn right. I mean, to be honest, to let people out there know, I mean, computer repairmen are worse than your local post office. You know? You think they can go postal? Imagine if they went postal. You know?
I mean, not only are they going to, you know, what's supposed to be going to do? Open, you know, read your mail. What are they going to do? They're going to get everything you put
in. I mean, good God. Well, what if the computer repairman deleted all your porn archives? You know?
And the
I
world,
would be
right?
crushed.
That's a hacker's biggest fear right there.
That would set me back a good year.
Yeah.
Spiff, I got a question for you.
All right.
You mentioned that you were in the process of coding an aimbot to demonstrate the exploit.
Right.
What payload will this aimbot deliver? Is this going to pop a window up on your screen or something?
I'm writing two versions. One that's just going to send as the payload a bunch of A's, you know, just to crash it, just to give, you know, so that the user will see, like, you know, error while trying to read 616161 or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then another version, I'll just have something. I'm not sure what I want to use as the payload. I want to make it.
I have a suggestion.
Something that'll just like create like a hi, I was here in like C, like
right.
.txt. Something, you know, even if somebody were to hack my bot, you know, the implications, there's no way they could, you know, destroy anything with that.
Right.
Make it load solitaire.
Yeah, or something like that.
Yeah, but
know?
Something
or,
real fun, like, you know, we're like playing around.
Yeah.
And ask for the actual AIM name and send it and be like, watch what happens to your computer and have solitaire come up.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Or better yet, well, up window asking for donations to HVX.
Yeah, that you know, that would be a beautiful little plug, you know.
It would be. Walking around demoing that.
Yeah. Well, now I got a question. Now did you root Hairball's AIM earlier to show him?
No, I have not.
My aim started acting really funny when I was talking to her earlier.
root me.
You can ask anybody. I'm one of the most. I've never done anything like that. I will ask permission before I do anything.
Well, no, we're not pissed or nothing. We just
Here. Here's permission. Dude. Root Hairball's AIM.
All right, well, then, fine.
Root me. I want to see that.
Well, no, I got a question. Like, okay, let's say when you run the program, does the would like Hairball know if you were running it? You know, if he was currently like on AIM at the current time, would he know that, you know, like you're sitting on his AIM?
Basically, is there any side effects?
No, see, that's the thing. Like, if you do buffer overflows right, mm-hmm. and you know what you're doing, the program will just go on its way nice and happy. If you know where to return the code, where to reset the EIP,
wow.
You know, it buffer overflows are a ridiculous art.
Right.
And I'm going to stand by that. It's insane. If you're really good with it, you can just, they won't even notice. I mean, like with the DCOM, mm-hmm. you go on like Security Focus and download one of those, they're written like awesome. Like you'll write it, the program will run, DCOM doesn't crash, and you have, it drops you, you tell that to the, I think it actually reverse connects to you right away. It'll just give you a C prompt.
Wow.
As a system, nonetheless, higher level than an administrator.
Exactly, yeah.
Wow.
No, I believe the early version of the DCOM exploit caused your computer to drop into a 60-second reboot.
Right, huh. But that's because it was in the early, you know, and then...
Right, in a temp
tuned
temp.
The,
now,
cell.
Here's something to really think about. The version of Vexi, the MS Blaster worm,
mm-hmm.
used the earlier code, which caused the machine to reboot.
It caused it to crash, and that was a side effect. People could tell when they had it.
Now, right. Imagine... what would have happened
right.
if the person just waited a few more days and used the newer code mm-hmm. to release MS Blaster.
Right.
That would have spread to the entire internet before anybody even knew what happened.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, I'm hoping that they patched it by now for that.
Oh, it's been patched.
Oh, it's patched.
Yeah.
Just okay. Think of how close to disaster really came with that one.
Wow.
Well, like the, what was it, LSAS? Is that the process? The Sasser worm? That was like the same thing. That had the, that has the same weird Windows thing. Like, if that program crashes, Windows shuts
yes,
down.
Yes, but the problem with that is, because of the blaster worm, the federal government mandated that IPs serve only residential customers block access to critical ports like 135 and 139.
They still
don't. So the blaster worm had a lot less of an impact because all those Windows machines were firewalled.
Right.
But just imagine if, you know, MS Blaster was not only the later version of the code that didn't crash, but was released as an O-Day, as opposed to the 35 days after the exploit was reported to Microsoft. It would have been easily the worst virus in the history of the world.
Right.
And yet Spiffomatic is sitting on something that's just as powerful and just as a potential for disaster.
Uh-huh.
And I have to commend him for doing the right thing and reporting it. Because easily, if he was a black hat, if he was a terrorist or one, I hate to use that word in this context, but
uh-huh.
easily, you could erase 100 million computers overnight.
Right.
Also. Now, Spiff?
Yes.
People may offer you obscene amounts of money for this code.
Yeah, they have.
Uh-huh. If they do accept it and donate all to HBS.
No, don't do that.
Nexus, you love plugging the little projects, don't you?
Yes, I do.
I have plenty of money from Lockheed. I'm not really interested in money at this stage. This is just...
Yeah.
Okay, well, let me take an opportunity to tell you. You... How much do you make at Lockheed? You make, what, six-digit income?
It's a good amount, yeah.
We are $1,300 away from a server. For the cost of your next 3 days at work,
yeah.
You can buy us a server.
Probably get one for free.
Or you can do that.
I'm not sure.
Maybe if I split it with you guys, host my new website, I'll do that.
You don't want to host your website.
Yeah, you don't want to host it on that server.
Also, as a little tip for our listeners out there, if you do find yourself infected with the MS Blaster or anything that gives you that little shutdown window, as I told Hairball one night on a comp, all you do is you get into a command prompt really quick and type shutdown-A, and your computer won't shut down, and you'll have time to remove it.
Yeah, I mean, all those people who had dial-up and couldn't get to the Microsoft Windows update site in time to patch their Blaster, but the computer kept rebooting, they could have used that trick.
Right.
Yeah, well, still, you know, when you connect to computer to the internet the first time, once in a while, you still might be able to blast some insane reason.
Hello?
Yeah. We're all here.
Is the show still going on?
Is the show still going on? Are we still recording?
Yeah.
All right.
Good. Now, something I'd like to point out is after this is patched, after the patch has been released, is there any chance we can get a look at this code?
I'm not sure. Because, I mean, you look at, like DCOM, right? I mean, like, how many people, like, new people set up, like, Windows XP machines or whatever that are open to DCOM.
Right.
I'm sure there's still plenty. I mean, like,
right.
A ton of script kiddies just go around, look at port scanning web servers, they find, okay, it's running Apache such and such. They get a security focus or whatever and, you know, just get an exploit, you know, and the exploit's there for completely good reasons, you know. Security focus is really reputable and everything, but it has, you know, bad implications.
Right. Yeah.
I can tell you from personal experience, I run a computer repair shop and I have what's referred to as business class service, and one of the quote-unquote features is no port or protocol filtering. So I get all those nasty requests, the 135 and 139. The other day, I was installing a fresh install of XP, and I plugged that Ethernet jack in, and within 35 seconds after grabbing a live IP address, that machine was going into a reboot.
Damn.
I mean, the internet is so hot right now, it's not funny.
Yeah, it's just saturated.
I know.
And, like, with all the different stuff going on, like, legally with the scene right now, I mean, it's kind of scary.
I mean, like, DCOM is pretty involved, like, how the thing works. AIM is, you know, that's pretty in your face. But, I mean, everybody uses that, like, people who don't really know too much about computers. I'm sure if I even release enough information about it, somebody's going to be releasing,
right.
You know, a canned exploit that kids will just be, you know, running on everybody and their brother.
Right.
Yeah, it's like, speaking of which, /Dottie now. I mean, I understand your hesitance to release anything about this at all.
Right.
I mean, but, you know, later on down the road, I would like to get a peek at it.
Oh, of course. Maybe, like, you guys on, like, a personal level, but I'd try to keep it within, you know, a knowledgeable ring of people without,
right.
You know. It is fun to tell people about it. I mean, it's really interesting how the thing works, but I don't want...
Personally, everything. I think it's just kind of scary.
Yeah.
You understand? Because, like, I have a pretty good idea of, like, where people aim from, you know, and that in itself is scary.
Right.
You know, and, like, if you get dropped in as, like, whatever that person is running on as, you know, that's scary.
Exactly. Yeah, because with Windows, it's always admin.
Yeah.
I mean, and
if you did release it in a way that it would format the hard drive, you pretty much take down all of Radio Jack because everyone runs AIM on their cache lines.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I'm sure the person who wrote MS Blaster never in a million years dreamed they would drop the power grid.
Yeah.
But who would expect who would expect machines that important to be running Windows? I mean, that's the first thing.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, but you got to stop and think. I mean, here, hang on a sec, guys.
Anyways.
Yeah, I don't think I would ever release that.
No, I just...
You know, like the actual coding, no fucking way.
No, I'm even hesitant to release.
Well, now I have a question, okay, like off of the code that you have now, okay, that you compiled yourself and everything.
Right.
How many other branches and, like, different avenues could you have taken to do the same thing? You know, like little loopholes that you're catching yourself now.
What do you mean, as far as this specific exploit?
Right. Like, how many more exploits have you found?
With AIM?
Yeah. Or is it just that one?
I just came across this one. I was looking specifically for a buffer overflow.
Right.
I have a lot of fun with those. I'm planning on making a realistic level with my new website that's going to involve that.
Right. With this one here.
Probably not with this one here.
I hope not.
I was thinking about having a level where it's like a company that makes like an FTP daemon and you download the free trial, find the buffer overflow. The web server's obviously going to be using their own software.
Right.
You get into it that way and, you know, do whatever.
That's hella realistic if I ever heard of it.
Yeah, I'm trying to get away from like, you know, like, give me the password kind of stuff, because what kind of websites have, like, just put password here?
Right.
You know, it's,
you'd be surprised.
I'm trying to go towards more professional stuff, getting away from using the word hacking and more, like, security auditing,
right.
Or I don't know.
No, instead of getting away from using the word hacking, you have to transform what the word hacking refers to.
Right.
And that's
right.
When you really win. All those people, you know, I want to feel proud when I put hacker on my resume.
Right. I'd like to too.
You know,
because
people are like, "Oh, evil, cyber terrorist." Oh.
Yeah. But if you change the word hacker into security, into internet security specialist,
all of a sudden you're in like gold, right?
Yeah, I mean, and that's basically what a hacker is anymore. You're a security specialist. You know what the holes are, and you can exploit them to your own game. But then again, you can also somewhat patch those holes unless you're a script key downloaded off PacketStorm.
Well, there are. I know a good amount of people who are hackers and cannot program at all.
Right.
I don't understand how it works, but they just have this mindset where they just think of these insane, like, most of it's input validation junk, but they'll just think of the most insane things to put, you know, into some input that's going to be posted on a PHPB board or whatever. And, you know, they'll find these sick exploits, but when it comes time to, like, patching them, it's like, you know, they have no clue.
Yeah. I mean,
those are the ones you got to worry about.
Right.
Yeah, those are the ones that are going to screw you. Now, I mean, back to the potential damage of this AIM, this AIM bug. No, I just want to bring up a couple, you know, I was thinking, and my bank, I've gone to my bank, and I've seen them using AOL Instant Messenger on the bank computers.
Oh, quality.
And you know, right there, that's the, you know, and that's, you know, if this is released, I know who I'm coming after. If my bank stuff is messed with, I know who I'm coming after.
I can just picture the secretary at NORAD, you know, aiming somebody.
Oh, man.
Of course, you know.
I also know for a fact that the government in Florida, also, I've seen them running AOL Instant Messenger.
Okay, I think it's time for us to call this a wrap.
Yeah. Okay, I'm never releasing anything about this anymore.
Yeah, I wouldn't. I really wouldn't.
Now, seriously, though, you know, you're doing a really good thing by reporting it.
Yeah.
If it had fallen in the wrong hands, it could have meant...
Exactly, yeah.
Whenever you joked earlier about life in Lynn, I don't think you were kidding.
No, yeah. Sad but true.
Yeah. This gets released, you might have a hit squad at your door.
Nah, don't worry about it.
But what do you mean, might have?
Anyways, we're going to wrap this up now.
All right.
Well, maybe we can change the subject and talk some more, but the show's going pretty good.
I don't know, man. It's like 4 in the morning already. I mean, there are some people that haven't had 4 days worth of sleep yet.
Yeah.
That's true.
You know what I'm saying? That's pulling six figures a year.
Must be rough.
Buy us a new server, right? Right? Maybe.
Well, we have to end the episode in order for him to do that.
Exactly. Yeah, fine.
All right. Let's see. Dom, you still here?
Yeah.
All right. You have anything you want to promote, man?
Yeah, Scope 6. I guess some things are going to be changing here recently. One of our members has been away for a while, and I think I might be changing some stuff up. So just stick with us, you know, come into the channel on IRC, on Internet IRC, Scope 6, with a 6 numerically, so it's S-K-O-P-E 6.
All right, and what's the website?
www.scope6.com, that's S-I-X at the end.
All right, next is anything to promote?
Just HBX donations, but I plugged that enough.
Nice, all right. Biggie, what you got over there?
Nothing much.
All right, man. Oh, somebody dropped.
That would have been Biggie.
Yeah. All right, Avid, what you got? Avid?
What?
What you got to promote?
I don't know.
Digzine? I don't know. Nothing much?
I've no idea.
All right. Spiff, anything you want to promote out there?
Nah.
Nothing?
Activesite.org, I guess.
Activesite.org, as always. Hairball.
HBX donation drive, I guess. We need money.
We be poor.
Yeah, we be poor and stuff.
Yeah. You want a shell? Donate money.
Yeah, free shells. Pay us.
Yeah.
That's a good idea. You have to set up, like, you know, premium shell accounts for the people who actually donated.
Yeah, oh, it's already in the works.
Yeah, it's already in the works.
We actually have a website, hbx.us/donations.html. It explains all the kickbacks you get, including premium shell accounts.
So donate. You can even donate hardware.
Yeah. Yes, send me stuff. I'll sell it on eBay if I can't use it.
There we go. All right, and as always, posting up for BinRev, BinRev.com. For Binary Revolution, that's like Stank Dog and the DDP and Voodoo Howl. And go ahead and take a listen to Default Radio also at DefaultRadio.com, DefaultRadio.com. That's like Doug and Lucky and Not Theory and Rigel 5 and all them. It's also another hacking, freaking radio show, so go check them out as well. And as always, check our news line for whenever we have new updates to the website or just HBX news in general. That's 206-888-5819. And this is Johnny Hacksaw, and we're out.
Speak.
his world. At the beginning of the show, we listened to The Beautifuls, and the name of that song is Mr. Salt and Mrs. Pepper, and you can find them, along with many other independent bands, at stlpunk.com.